Welcome to Pumpkin Spice Podcast, the spookiest horror movie podcast on the planet. I'm Rob with Graham. Hi, Graham.
Happy Halloween, Rob.
Yes, it is that time of year. And you know what I'm going to do? You know, so often in my past, I would think, it's Halloween. I need to release a spooky episode on Halloween. It's like, no. You release it like the week leading up to Halloween.
Yeah, people can enjoy it.
Yes, they want to be like prepping. They want to watch the movies. They want to listen to the podcast. They may not get to the podcast on the day the holiday falls on, right? They got parties, baby.
That's such a great point, Rob. And I never really even thought about that. So yeah, like for those of us who take Halloween really seriously and we're carving pumpkins mm-hmm. and we're getting our costumes all figured out. Yes. If you need something to listen to, hello, that's why we're here.
Yep. That's why we're here. That's why we do it. We don't do it for us, Graham. We do it for everyone else.
We do this because no one else will listen to us.
That is also true. coming from doing years of podcasts that had varying levels of success, you got to do it for you, baby. I don't know how many times I'm going to say baby. That is on the lexicon of saying things like the feels or deep dive. Like, yeah. Gotta get it out of here. I gotta stop dive. With these verbal crutches.
Yeah, well, stop with the verbal crutches. And when we're talking about how no one will listen to us, you know, maybe our audience will stop listening to us after we talk about today's Halloween movie.
Yes, we are watching Psycho 2. We watched it.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about it because guess what, Graham? I think that there are a lot of people who would be surprised to find out there are four canonical Psycho movies.
And hot take, all three sequels are better than the original.
Wow. I have only seen this sequel. I know the fourth one, I believe, is a prequel and not the TV show, but like...
Okay, so there was a Showtime movie that came out in like the early 90s, which was the fourth film.
Yeah.
It was a made-for-TV movie.
And I think that was a prequel, right?
No, it actually takes place, it's like the fourth installment from what I remember, and I haven't seen it for years.
Sorry, I just think it was because it says the beginning.
Yeah.
But it does look like there's an older Anthony Perkins in it, so it couldn't be.
We didn't have the digital de-aging technology that we have today.
Ooh. And it's so good, too, right? It looks great.
Yeah, exactly. It's not distracting at all. But the fourth movie is one of the best made-for-TV movies I've ever seen. And just real quickly, the premise to that is Anthony Perkins, Norman Bates, he calls into a radio show and he says, I'm going to kill my wife. Ooh. And they say, oh my gosh, why are you going to do that? And so he starts going through his story about Norman Bates. And they're like, okay, you've had a bad past, but why are you going to kill your wife? And he says, because she got pregnant.
Oh no.
And it's this interesting thing where like he feels he has to stop evil by killing this woman who is going to have his baby. And she has this cool scene where she's just like, don't you think the baby is going to be part me too? You know, like you're thinking all about yourself, but this baby will also be a part of me.
Yes.
It's a cool little movie. I don't know.
Yes,
I liked it.
Yes, yes. I like this. I'm liking it already, Graham. And Psycho 3 has a hilarious cover to it where it's just Anthony Perkins like holding keys to the hotel.
That's why I didn't rent it as a kid.
Oh.
Because I was just like that. I felt that the cover was kind of lame. And then I watched it. And the third one is directed by Anthony Perkins.
Oh. And
it has just this visual flair that it's amazing. He's kind of playing homage to both Psycho and Hitchcock's entire career. But it's a really great movie and it's just like off the wall insane. Psycho 2 kind of prepares you for the outlandish craziness of part three. So if you liked part two, but you thought, but you're thinking to yourself, I would like this if it was a little bit more crazy, go three.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of, a Jehovah's Witness just came into my door. So if anyone heard the doorbell, I checked the old doorbell camera because we're living in the future. It was a young, I say Jehovah's Witness because previously Jehovah's Witnesses have come to my door. It could have very well been a Mormon or a Seventh-day Adventist. You never know. Or someone selling solar tiles. I don't know.
Anyway. I don't mean to be hard on you, Rob, but that was a really missed opportunity. You could have invited him in and just yes. like, hey, just, you know, listen to our podcast. And if you want to comment at any time, let us know.
That would have been a good idea. I next time, because there will be a next time. But yeah, I'm very intrigued to watch the rest of this series. Maybe not necessarily for the podcast. Maybe one psycho a year, Graham, is all we can take. And you know that Vince Vaughn one?
Well, it's funny.
We've talked about that on the podcast in the past, in the shuttered request-only episodes. That
They showed that recently in Austin, and I was unable to make the show, but from what I hear, it was a sold-out.
Wow.
And I think people were just curious, and I think a lot of people, you know, Rob, we're of a certain age, you know, we're not getting any younger. And so that was released when we were like middle school teenagers, you know, that kind of thing. And for people who were not from that time, I think it's just this curiosity.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, it was curiosity for us too, you know, as we're like getting into film, like I watched that. I had seen the original Psycho before and I was like, oh, how fun, because it wasn't the heyday of remakes either. Like, what did you have? You had like comedy reboots, right? Like the Dan Aykroyd Dragnet, you know,
that's right, the
Twilight Zone movie, which was tongue-in-cheek. And so when you get this like remake of Gus Van Sant's Psycho, but it's supposed to be this script, and I promise people, we'll talk about Psycho 2 in just a moment, but you get this script that's like, it's exactly shot and using the same script as the original, except when it's not. Like, why would you tout that you're going to do the exact same thing, except for have Julianne Moore say, let me go grab my Walkman, and Vince Vaughn obviously having a more intense shower scene than in the original.
Yeah, we'll be clean. Like, all they added was him looking through a keyhole and pleasuring himself.
Yeah, and the Walkman line.
And we don't need to see his hand unzip his pants in the original to know what's going on. And that's where I'll give the original credit. Now, obviously, they couldn't have done that back in 1960.
Sure, but like, you can leave some stuff to the imagination.
Exactly, exactly.
Because we get it.
I don't want to be too hard on Gus because I love
movies
that he's made, and I'm kind of, in, let's be nice and say, indifferent about others. But the guy has made it. I mean, I think Drugstore Cowboy is a masterpiece. And it's just so interesting that he chose to remake a masterpiece. That's a lot of courage and confidence, and I don't know.
Blank check, would you say? To quote the podcast, blank check?
I think that's pretty much, because I think that was made right after Good Will Hunting, which I'm not a huge fan of, but we'll go on. And after that one, Oscars, the studio was like, hey, what do you want to make next?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think, that's what I'm implying, you know. And Graham, if you don't listen to the Blank Check podcast, you probably love it. They go through a director's filmography, and they say to which movie were they given the blank check to make the thing they want to make.
That's an awesome concept.
Yeah, and you'd love how intense they get into making films. It is. I'll send you a link. It's for
Please
you.
Do. I'm going to be carving pumpkins tonight, so I need something to listen to.
Of course. Well, let me, for anyone who's unfamiliar with Psycho 2, let me read the Letterboxd description. It's 22 years later, and Norman Bates is finally coming home. After years of treatment at a mental institution for the criminally insane, serial killer Norman Bates is finally released, deciding to move back into his long-dead mother's infamous old house. He soon finds himself tormented by her demands and begins to question his own sanity. Of course, this stars Anthony Perkins reprising his role as Norman Bates, Vera Miles, Meg Tilly, the famous author, is in this film, and sister of Jennifer Tilly.
That's correct. Yeah. Well, Meg Chucky Tilly, fame. I believe, has an Oscar.
I think so, too.
She was in, what,
Fame, The Big Chill? She's done some shit.
The Tilly sisters were tearing it up in the 80s and 90s.
They very much were. And she does great in this film. Like, to be the Norman Bates counterpart.
She's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect casting. And you really couldn't ask for a better performance. She really brings it. And I like how it kind of adds the mother aspect to a daughter. Mm-hmm. Her conflicts with her mom and how that parallels to Norman and his mother.
Yeah. I was surprised at the take this movie had that he's reformed and he's healthy and everything's okay. And Robert Loggia is got, he's back the entire movie. Yet they do these things all right, well, but I guess this is realistic. They just take him back to his former home, right? Because you're released. It's you still own this. And Robert Loggia does do the are you sure you want to stay here? And that's great. And they do these buildups to where Anthony Perkins is back on track. And of course, we will be spoiling aspects of this movie, everyone. He gets a job at the diner down the block. People are welcoming, they're kind of so-so. But Sibowitz is now running the motel. Detective Sibowitz from NYPD Blue.
Oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. I understand. Dennis Franz.
Yes, Dennis Franz. And it is a seedy motel. More seedy than it once was. People are doing drugs. They're bringing sex workers over there. It's not a good look for a successful business. Although, Dennis Franz does say, he's like, I'm making money with this place. It wasn't making any money before. So you should thank me for keeping your property.
And it's a seedy hotel. They could have made it a little seedier. There's that scene where Norman Bates looks in the ashtray and says, mm-hmm. what is that? And Dennis Franz looks down like a total square and says, that would be drugs. Yeah. Now, I you're expecting cocaine residue or
maybe
a needle.
Needle. Yeah.
Yeah. Really bad stuff is going on there. But no, the kids are just, teenagers are going there to smoke pot and make out.
Yeah. And businessmen who have a layover.
Yeah. We call that the no-tell motel.
Yes. And I love when Norman Bates comes in and he's like, what is this? And it's like
parents who use drugs. Have children who use drugs.
And it looks exactly like that PSA.
Yeah.
I learned it by watching you,
Norman.
that was created because of, that was inspired by.
Yeah. And Norman also Bates. That dad in that PSA looks a little bit like Dennis Franz in this movie.
Dennis, he's been in several Brian De Palma movies. That's kind of where I kind of know him more from that than NYPD Blue. Uh-huh. He was the first one to show his butt.
Yes.
On screen.
Very and he was, famous, but.
Didn't he also have the first curse word on network television?
Yeah, I think they said shit.
Okay,
NYPD Blue. Or, you know what? I say shit. It was probably something stupid like goddamn.
Yeah.
Because they were saying damn for a while, but they were you know what? We're going to allow a goddamn on TV.
And the scene in which that happens, it's not when they find a dead body. It's he's walking down the street and steps in dog shit. He's like, God damn it.
God damn it. What does a cop got to do? I'm just trying to save lives here. Graham, I wanted to ask you about Psycho 2. You have stated that you like this better than the original. And can you explain why that is?
Yes, I can. The short answer is that this movie is a lot more focused. It knows exactly what it's doing. It's driven. I feel that the first movie kind of meanders around and it doesn't really know what it's doing. And the structure of the film's kind of wonky. And this person's the star of the movie. Now this person's the star of the movie. And that's fine with me, but it just never, for me, the original Psycho is a couple of great, great scenes. But as a movie overall, it's not something I would want to watch again.
Yeah.
With this, it just like the action and the story just flows, even though the story is absolutely ridiculous. And we'll, do you want to get to that just real quick?
Yeah, I just want to ask you a question about this, because I think there are like people who enjoy film. There are people who like research film and know all the facts about stuff. And none of these are wrong except for the one I'm about to say. And then there's like social media film people who want to like tout things and always say why something is the best thing that's ever been created. And it's pure and utter nonsense because it who gives a shit, right?
Yeah.
People can like what they want to like. And I think Hitchcock is one of those polarizing directors where like people on socials will like, or say, yeah, his movies were shit, and here's why. And then other people are like, one of the greatest filmmakers that ever lived. And it probably falls more in the middle for every creative that's ever existed. And all of the weird Hitchcocky stuff that's come out, there are the people talk about more, like The Birds and stuff, and how he treated some of his actors aside for a moment. Was Psycho fun to watch when I was a kid? Yeah. But movies from the 60s have weird meandering plots that are much easier to watch, I think, before the invention of like the cell phone and where like attention spans could be a little bit longer. And I'm not even trying to be Mr. Old Man here. I'm just saying like when you're discovering film from a different era, it's easier to watch than it is when you're like, oh no, I've watched a fair share of movies from the 60s and they're kind of slow and I've seen Blow Up and I've seen, you know, the evolution of cinema verite.
Yeah.
That's not what Psycho is. But you're right. When they come to make a sequel, it's like, well, we need to make, we've got all the pieces, but we need to make a 1980s movie. We need to, we cannot make a 60s movie.
Yeah. And so we add, we pepper in a little Friday the 13th sort of slasher stuff into this we give it a 1980s flair. Now, as far as the 60s go, 60s and 70s, those are probably like my two favorite decades for film. And maybe I'm a little hard on Psycho because compared to other films, it doesn't hold up as well as, let's say, now, if we're talking something outside of America, 1960 horror film to look into is Eyes Without a Face from France. That holds up a lot better and grabs your attention. But even something like A Face in the Crowd, 1957. Sure. With Andy Griffith, that is like holds your attention. It's like Martin Scorsese before Martin Scorsese existed.
Very true.
And so what I think a lot of my criticism with Psycho is that I love the 60s decade and people are like, yeah, you love Psycho. And I'm like, no, it's kind of at the bottom of the list for me compared to the other films of the 1960s. One day we'll talk about 1966, which I think is the greatest year for cinema, another discussion.
Sure. And the last thing I'll say is like, obviously I was painting with a wide brush there, but in terms of Psycho specifically, it does kind of feel like Alfred Hitchcock was like, I want to play a trick on the audience more so than it was, I want to make a good movie. Because you always see the things that's like, this movie must be seen from the beginning. And I mean, it's so violent. It needs to be in black and white. And I'm going to put this one actor in there, but she's going to be killed off and no one's going to know about it. And it's like, well, pick a lane, Mr. Hitchcock. Like, what are we going to do? And so, it does start pretty damn slow. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about this story.
Okay.
What What's the main point you need to get across here, Graham?
Okay, and we're like heavy into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
Just saying. But like, okay, so Norman befriends this young woman. And Meg Tilly. And as the movie goes on, we discover that she is part of the Loomis family.
Billy Loomis from Scream?
Well, you see where he gets his name now.
Yeah.
Vera Miles returns as, what's her name, Loomis? Lila.
Yes.
She's Lila Crane?
Lila Crane, because Loomis. Because she changes her name.
Yeah.
It's all part.
Anyway, so Meg Tilly is her daughter, and they have this brilliant plan. They want Norman Bates to go back to prison, and they're going to accomplish that by trolling him and teasing a criminally insane person so that he kills somebody in the town and will go back to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's the plan. You put all the town in like immediate danger.
Yeah. Just for vigilante justice.
And I know that sounds stupid, and it certainly is, but Richard Franklin, really, the director, really somehow performs miracles here, because you're watching it, you're entertaining everything, and then maybe like an hour after you finish the movie, you're kind of like, well, that's kind of stupid, but I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Well, a lot of movies are stupid, but it's a matter of like how you feel when you're watching it, you know?
But what a plan.
Yeah. It's wild. And it's perfectly 1983. This could just work if we do it right. I think it's fun how the relationship between Norman and Meg Tilly's character play out. When you start realizing that she's part of the problem, Mary is her name. You start obviously not trusting her as much, but then you start realizing like, oh, she doesn't like this, and she goes against her mom. And then you're like, okay, well, who's doing all this killing? And, you know, long story short, everyone, like, Norman is still not healthy. I do want to, and this is major spoiler, like, Graham, I do want to talk about the end of the movie.
Okay, yeah, sure.
It's like barely set up at the beginning of the film. Is it still like a deus ex machina?
How so?
Well, I guess that would mean that Norman meeting his mother would somehow fix everything that happened.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't fix anything. It's just this weird, like, tacked on, let's make sure you know that he's still criminally insane.
Yeah, it's like we got Claudia Breyer, put her in the movie.
Yeah, but in two scenes.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense because they reveal that the women were sisters. So the blood is still in him no matter which one of them is his mother. So the whole point's mute.
Yeah. Except that don't they say something about Mrs. Spool?
Doesn't Spool mean anything to you?
Yeah. Doesn't... That she had her spells, and that Norman got the spells, but her sister didn't get the spells, even though she obviously did.
Yeah.
Because this Norman's foster mom, I guess, his aunt.
It's like, just as batshit crazy.
Yeah. So it doesn't really make any sense. But they do need to make sure, like a sitcom, reset. And go back to what it was at the beginning of Psycho 1.
The confrontation with his quote-unquote real mother didn't really serve that much of a purpose. And that whole plot line didn't. And they could have dropped that easily. And what I think is interesting...
Or used it more thoroughly.
Used it, period.
Yeah.
but I think the movie would have been a lot more effective because that scene where Meg Tilly is kind of blamed for everything, you know, and they're leading her away in handcuffs and she's trying to explain what's going on. And that's where you end the movie, with that sort of ironic, you know, he's fooled them again.
Yes.
And now this innocent person who was just trying to help him, well, trying to make him go crazy and then help him.
Yeah.
Which, again, like the idea of, you know, it kind of, I have an idea, Rob, for a short film we need to make about kids that torment and troll a guy on the internet. Ooh. And and then he commits a murder because he goes insane because of it, and they feel partly responsible.
Ooh, I like that.
How about that?
Now, Graham, is there any final things that we didn't cover before we hop on a bus? Because I don't want to talk too much more about the story, but I do think that, like, the main points you brought up, that, like, it's sillier. You may not have said that directly, but it's sillier, yeah, which makes it more fun. The pacing's better, and it's a more, like, tight story. Makes this worth a watch, not to mention all of the, like, actors that are in it from early 80s popularity, and yeah, then the original. Yeah, just so good.
Well, I just want to say that Vera Miles is like this legendary Hollywood icon, and to see that knife go through her mouth at the end of the movie is just like, you have now incorporated Hollywood gold into the slasher genre, and like the nasty 80s, you know,
it's bad.
Gritty. I mean, that's a gritty special effect that they pull off there.
Totally.
Other than that, all I have to say is watch Psycho 2. And if you enjoyed that, give 3 and 4 a chance. 3 is silly, just like this one. And then 4 has just a really kind of a serious tone and a really interesting take on the character.
I'm looking forward to that for sure. This was a special Halloween episode.
Yes.
So I'm not sure if you have bus tickets, but I'd love to know if you have anything set up. What's the thought there?
Oh my gosh, we didn't even talk about this because we're taping months ahead,
yeah,
of time, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that we're going to go, well, obviously before we go home for the holidays, we got to go somewhere else, right?
Well, yeah, because what we already know from the other episode that came out this month is that next month we'll be watching The Beyond, not From Beyond, The Beyond. And we've added in a little extra special treat for you in your candy bag, everyone.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, since we did a special episode and for Halloween, we should just keep the train running and do another special episode in November.
Gotcha.
I say train running, but maybe it's a bus.
We're going to take a bus, and we're going from California to a special place in November for the holidays.
Oh, boy.
No, you're going to come and see me, ooh, in Texas for the holidays.
So, okay. So you're mailing me the bus ticket to come visit you in Texas.
Yes. But I'm taking a bus too, because it's not Austin.
Oh, okay. We'll meet in Texas, but not in your town.
Yes.
Got it.
Sorry.
What are we doing?
It's a lot to throw at you. I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to plan my trip, man. I'm just trying to plan my trip.
We are going to Uncertain, Texas.
Uncertain, Texas. Tell me more.
Because, you know, if you came to Texas, the obvious and easy one would be Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
sure,
in the Hill Country. This is Eaten Alive, which is Tobe Hooper's follow-up to Texas Chainsaw, which I think is just brilliant.
Ooh.
And it's about a crazy guy who owns a hotel and kills people in the hotel and then throws them to his pet crocodile.
Oh, I'm into it. Well, that'll be next time on... Well, it won't be next time, but it'll be next month on Pumpkin Spice Podcast. We're filling up your feed, everyone, and I hope you're enjoying it. And if you are truly enjoying it, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. Graham, always a pleasure. They got to check out our Instagram. You've been doing great over there.
Yeah, I'm trying to be 21st century Graham when I'm on there.
I don't do too much social. It's 1960s Graham living on Instagram.
There you go.
All right. Well, everyone, we'll see you next time on Pumpkin Spice Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.